The Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live.
Thanks for being with us. We are going to have John Wilner, Wilner Hotline, all things around the college football scene. Big weekend ahead for both U of A and ASU. Todd Marinovich and I caught up with Todd, former Raider, former USC Trojan, former Modern Day, former, Capo Valley, for those of us that were SoCal kids back in the day. Todd Marinovich, and his new book is out. He has, of course, gone through hell and back. You'll hear from Todd in a difficult conversation that we had this over the weekend. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. As always and through the years, that is Desert Financial Credit Union. I'm actually recording this on a Sunday night because I have speaking engagements and things. This is wedding week for me. Not for me, but walking my daughter down the aisle this week. So it's going to be a, this will be us just today. And then the rest of the week, it'll be the gang doing what they do on the site and around everything else that we've got going on here at Sports 360. So I sat here yesterday. I didn't go to the Cardinal game. I find that going to the game and sitting in a hermetically sealed press box with people that are there to have every last thing down, I get more accomplished being in here and taking in the game. I do. And then I'll go to games sometimes and sit in seats and just take it all in from that perspective. I'm really glad that I stayed here, though, yesterday because of what was going on with one play after the next, after the next, after the next. And yeah, there's replay if you sit in a hermetically sealed box, but I found it to be much more useful for what I was looking for yesterday, which was a Cardinal win. They blew it against Tennessee. Tennessee, a winless, desperate football team that should have been dead on arrival into the second half. But instead, your Cardinals, through the years, I found this to be true, got here in 94. And I could be the guy that goes back and goes through all the tough losses. I go through Denny Green, and we thought they were, we thought they were, and all that stuff. We can do that today. But I've done that deal so many times. I can't tell you how many times I've done it. And it's like, you know what's going to happen. You know Michael's behind the scenes going to blow his mind, and they're going to say, oh, no, everything's great. And the pressure's going to start mounting on Jonathan Gannon, just like it did coaches before. We're going to sit here and hear about Kyler, and there comes a point. And that point for me was a couple of years ago. It's like we see the same things. And then there's people in my industry, God bless them, they've got to sit there and talk about this stuff every single year. It's like it's the same script. And so if it's a football player who's a pro who drops a ball before crossing into the end zone, it's not a personal attack. It's just I don't know why people do that. I don't know why it happens. If he just takes one extra step, we're talking about it. Yeah, they're supposed to go and win. But no. Instead, and then there's the holy roller. I saw the holy roller with the Chargers and Raiders. Do yourself a favor. John Madden, Chargers, Raiders, Bill King on the call. Just YouTube. Just go watch it on YouTube. It's great. It's tremendous. That's what happened yesterday to your Cardinals. And then it's Kyler having a ball snapped off his helmet. And then it's Kyler going over to the sideline. And then he's thinking about coming back in. And then, well, his foot, you know, is, and then he's back in. And then the play calling down the stretch. It was just like one thing after the next. I wanted to put on the Benny Hill soundtrack. When they make the highlight video, I always love it when a team is not good. It doesn't matter what sport it is. They make this big highlight film. And they roll it out there for their season ticket holders. And they roll it out there for their sponsors. And it's, look at how great everything is. Look at how marvelous everything is. Week one, we took care of business at New Orleans. And then Big Red came home and took care of business against Carolina. The Cardinals tried to find their way. And around week eight, they managed to do it. There won't be a mention of what happened in Tennessee. There won't be anything of a ball being snapped off of Kyler's helmet. How can you script that? Just one thing after the next with your Cardinals. So I'm more interested in, and they play the Colts this week. Okay, you're going to go on the road. You're not going to be expected to win. And we're going to be sitting here talking about a team that is at 2-4. Everything this week will be about Marvin Harrison Jr. going back to Indianapolis and how great that's going to be. So we will just turn the page here in town. How exciting is it for you to go back home? How about, what are you going to do to fix this? Because it's going to be the usual, well, we just got to get better. We got to get harder. We got to get back in the film room. It's always the same scripted stuff. There's nothing new or interesting about what's going on in the NFL this time of year. There isn't. You know, was yesterday interesting? Was it entertaining? I didn't burn. Thank goodness that, you know, there's this great deal here where you can actually record a game and go back and watch some of it, which I do. Because there's more to life than just sitting there for 3 hours watching this stuff every year. It's the same story with them. It's not the same story with Arizona State. And it's not the same story with U of A. Watching U of A do what they're supposed to do, which is take apart a bad Oklahoma State team. They have undefeated BYU coming to town this week. And if you're a college football fan like I am, much interest, much more interesting, much cleaner, much more fun. Band, players are getting paid, so what? At least it's out there now where it didn't used to be. The excitement, the energy, the enthusiasm, it's just fun. So U of A football, usually by this time of year, usually, we're talking about will the coach get fired? And we're talking about when is U of A basketball's first game? That's how it is. And you're a Wildcat fan, you know I'm right. If you're a Sun Devil football fan, this week you go to Utah. John Wilner and I are going to talk about both games here in a couple of minutes. Also going to get into what happened at UCLA over the weekend, because I think Penn State is going to be the next place that lines up a coach and fires them. Texas has got to be looking at Sark. You go to Florida and you just get embarrassed. And now they're, if I told you at the start of the season, that, hey, by the way, Penn State and Texas are not going to be in the AP top 25. When we're talking about college football playoff teams a year ago, they're not going to even be in the top 25 when we get into the second weekend of October. There's no way you would have bought that. None. So I think if you go down the list and just look at the games that are coming up this weekend, you know, what's going up at Colorado's interesting. Deion's health is not good again. And they play Iowa State this week, and he's talking about, you know, is he even going to make it out through the season? So the coaching vacancies will come quick, and they'll come fast. The WNBA, the Mercury, are down two. I've watched over the weekend the amount of conversation about the labor peace or labor unrest or labor anger. I shouldn't say peace because there is none. And the players just destroying their commissioner, just going after her. And I am almost always on the player's side. Almost always. In this space, it is, you guys, you need to go underground. Fans don't want to hear about this. And oh, by the way, doesn't matter if you're cheering for Las Vegas or for Phoenix. This is not what you want swirling around your championship game, championship series. They don't play again until Wednesday. So it's not going to be, what are the Mercury going to do down 0-2? It's going to be who's meeting with Kathy and who's not meeting with Kathy and who's got to clear the air with Kathy. What does Caitlin think? And are the players underpaid? Yes, they are. $70,000. Yeah, they're underpaid. Let's not try to sit here and say you guys should just be grateful to be on television. You know, and that's a tough one for some people. There's some people I've known that I've covered. I did the WNBA for the first three seasons of their existence, to the play-by-play. So the bouncing around on planes and all that stuff, flying three to an aisle, and then it was a just like a total, I don't even know the term to use to get them to be able to fly in a private jet. Like it was some sort of outlandish, outrageous request. Like, no, it shouldn't be that hard. If you're going to treat them fairly, I'm not saying they need to be paid like LeBron James and as they believe they do. That's not the case. That's not the case. But there's got to be some room and to put that discussion off to the side rather than make it this whole series. This whole week is going to be, rather than Mercury talk, except for the Mercury diehard. It's all going to be about labor peace or lack thereof. Watch some of the baseball playoffs. How do you miss Ohtani and the Phillies? You don't. I saw Vlad just go crazy, even though it was opposite the Cardinals game. Baseball playoffs are great. A lot of fun. Take it all in. That's pretty much it. John Wilner is next. And then after John, my conversation with Todd Marinovich. That will be a little bit later on. I'm Brad Sussmat. As we do every Monday, John Wilner with us. Wilner Hotline. As we go through the college scene, nationally syndicated columnists, always good to have John with us on Mondays. We chop it up, and of course, his content is on the site as well. All right. I can go a lot of different directions here. I could go with, is Penn State now the place where there's going to be a coaching change? Is Texas going to be the place where there's a coaching change? Should UCLA promote a guy who's never called plays before to be the head coach because he's so charismatic and has a big last name that helps? Is BYU really that good undefeated? And is U of A ready to take them down? And is Arizona State ready to go to Utah? Okay, so those are just like half of what I have for you, John. Where do you want to start?
Or you could have started with, will the Big Ten take $2 billion in private capital and completely change the face of college sports for the next 20 years?
Yes, that came out last week.
There's
Mr. Wilner.
There's that. I mean, I think we ought to probably start with the Bruins, huh? That was something else. I mean, good for them. Jerry Neuheisel called a great game. I also think it shows how bad of a hire DeShawn Foster made when he named Tino Cinceri as the offensive coordinator, and he wasn't good. Nobody liked him. Their offense was completely different against Penn State. The Nittany Lions obviously kind of no-showed that game, at least in the first half. After the Oregon loss, you got to travel cross country, play a winless team, no-show by the Nittany Lions, and UCLA has got better players than 0-4. That's the thing. When the season began, you would have probably pegged the Bruins for 4 or 5 wins with Nico quarterback and some decent pieces. And so they underperformed their talent by a lot. That was a lot closer to what we would have expected. Terrible loss for James Franklin. I think it serves him right. I think everything he's getting serves him right. If you got Villanova, FIU, and Nevada as your non-conference schedule, and you have Penn State's resources, I mean, come on.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're in big trouble, and I think this is the year they're going to make a change there. I don't know how they can bring him back after this.
Well, John, I don't like seeing his post-game comments about, you know, it's been a tough loss. We didn't put it behind us. Then we had to travel cross-country. I just don't want to hear any coaches talking about traveling. This is what you signed up for. This is your television deal. You're on across the country on a huge network in the middle of the day where people can see you just completely crap the bed.
Yep.
You know? So I feel like in his space, over at Texas, though, they're not ranked with all the NIL. And Arch Manning might be a guy that should consider just going in the portal to go someplace in the middle of nowhere and figure it out, John.
Yeah. Yeah, he's really struggling. And I think a lot of it is the pressure he's putting on himself. I don't know that there's ever been a college quarterback with as much pressure as Manning. Now, part of that comes with the territory. I don't think Texas will make a coaching change. I think Sark's a really good coach.
Right.
But he is clearly nothing close to what anybody expected, Manning, that is. And so, yeah, they're in trouble. I think it's fascinating. We are 6 weeks into the season, and the preseason number one and two teams are unranked.
Mm-hmm.
Penn State and Texas, unranked. And Clemson, which was 5 or 6, I think, unranked. Those are three teams everybody thought certainly playoff bound, potential national title contenders, and they're all out. And it's early October. It is something else. It's fascinating.
It's early October, but are you willing to say, because I'll just say right now, they're all not going to be back in the playoff. Or none of those three are going to be back in the playoff this year.
Hey, I mean, at this point,
ago, John, they're right there in the semis.
And yeah, I mean, at this point, I would say Texas is the only one that's got a path. I mean, Penn State, that loss to UCLA was so bad that even if they went out, unless they win the Big Ten title,
there you
even
go.
If they're 10-2, They're not going to make it with a loss to UCLA. Clemson's got three losses. I think Texas, if they can get it together on the field, would still be able to put together a resume that would be worth the playoff. I mean, losing at Ohio State, nobody's going to hold that against them.
But they have Oklahoma this week.
They got Oklahoma this week.
And Oklahoma's ranked, I think, sixth this week.
Oklahoma's got a great defense. Oklahoma won't have John Mateer. Oklahoma's going into that game with a backup quarterback.
Right.
If Texas can't win that, boy, then, you know, that's it for their season.
Okay. We've talked about coaching carousel a little bit. And I think as the season is progressing, we're seeing openings come up. I feel like we're now shifting into every year it's going to be like this, where we're going to see guys behind the scenes. So Billy Napier, we've thrown dirt on him I don't know how many times. And he comes away with it, but in the state of Florida, Miami football, in my humble opinion, college football is better when Miami of Florida football is better. Not just Florida State, not Florida, but the U has got to be, the Hurricanes have got it going on, John. And I think that is probably one of the best kept stories so far this season. There hasn't been this whole avalanche of Miami's back.
No, the focus has been a lot of other places. Miami is back. They're really good on the lines of scrimmage. And Carson Beck, the transfer quarterback from Georgia, is having a terrific season. Look, to me, I agree with you. It's much better sport when Miami is good, no doubt. But I just think we are in this slow build to how's Mario Cristobal going to blow it? That's kind of how I view it. Because Mario can recruit like nobody's business.
Yeah.
But when it comes to the play calling, when it comes to in-game time management decisions, you know there's going to be something's going to go kablooey for them. And the only question is whether it will cost them a spot in the playoff. But that, to me, otherwise, you know, they're really good. They're the best team in the ACC. They've already beaten South Florida. They've beaten Florida. They've beaten Notre Dame. They've beaten Florida State. I mean, they got a great resume. They've been my number one team on my AP ballot for weeks, and they still are, because they're beating good teams, and they're beating them badly.
John Wilner with us for a couple of minutes. Wilner Hotline, as we do every Monday, chopping it up around the college football scene. Some quick thoughts from you. Will Deion Sanders make it through the season, or will he step down?
I don't know. He did come say after the game the other day that he thinks he's got more issues with blood clots, which you hate to hear.
Sure.
I just don't know how he's going to make it. I really don't at this point. And, you know, he's not going to let the quality of his team dictate the decision. But at the same time, the quality of the team impacts, I would think it would impact subconsciously, perhaps.
Sure.
You know, his whole outlook. And they're not any good this year. It's a tough deal. Really tough. You feel bad for the guy. He's got a lot of health problems. And I think he's done a terrific job getting to this point, given the bladder cancer and everything he's dealing with on that front for the last year. So good for him getting to this point, but it's going to be hard. These next 2 months are going to be really hard for him physically and emotionally.
I'd like to see Colorado say that he is going to step aside for health issues and he will remain within the athletic department, not from a standpoint of he's going to collect a check. But I actually think having Deion Sanders talk to young men, and I've not seen him around young women talking to coaches or teams, I actually think it's a positive, John. I think there is something there. People are like, oh, he's full of it, this and that. I don't know. When I see stuff and hear from some people up there, he's run a loose ship.
Yep.
And he's had a different set of rules for his boys when they were there.
Yep.
Now they're not there. But I do believe that he does have a space that he could help an athletic department out if he so chooses. The idea of, well, I've done what I'm going to do here, I'm going to get healthy, and then when Texas comes up, whatever comes open, I'm going to go chase that. That doesn't work for me.
Yeah, I think that given his health issues, this could very well be it for him as a coach. I agree with you. He has a way of relating to, you know, 18, 20-year-olds who play football, and he is real with them. I think for the most part, he is pretty real with them, and there is some value in that if you're the Colorado Athletic Department. There's no doubt about it.
Okay, before we get out of here, let's run through some games. Indiana's at Oregon. This, on paper, looks great. To me, it looks like an absolute train wreck, and it'll be 70 to, you know, it's going to get out of control. If you see it the same way?
Probably. But the way Penn State played against UCLA, it does make you think a little bit about that Oregon game in Happy Valley. Okay, that was a terrific win, but maybe Penn State's just a 7-5 team, and the Ducks, maybe they aren't quite as good as we thought. So I think the most likely outcome is, yeah, that game is close for two or three quarters, and then Oregon ends up winning by 15, 20 points, which is kind of what happened when Indiana went to Ohio State last year. But we'll see. It's going to be it's two of the three best teams in the Big Ten. And right now, Indiana quarterback Fernando Mendoza and Oregon quarterback Dante Moore are the front runners for the Heisman. I don't know the exact odds, but they're the top two guys at this point. So in some regards, it has a, you know, a much bigger impact on the sport than just the Big Ten race, because if one of those guys plays well, they're going to be the Heisman front runner.
Is there any storyline around Michigan USC outside of two storied programs that have met in the Rose Bowl and great footage? I'm getting to Lincoln Riley and national heat getting on him again. Give me your thoughts on that matchup.
Yeah, well, he, you know, he hasn't made an excuse yet, but we'll see. You know, it's a good kickoff time for them, and it's at home, so you wouldn't think he'd go to the excuse card. Mm. Well, but I think this is a great judge of USC's toughness at the line of scrimmage. I mean, Illinois went up and down the field on him. Now Michigan's coming into the Coliseum. If Michigan just kind of beats them up, smash mouth football, and USC wilts, I think that is going to be a line that crosses for most Trojan fans, and they're going to be done with Riley. Mm-hmm. I really do. And that's, to me, that is the focus. Is USC tough enough? That's the question with his teams. We know they can score. Are they tough enough? And here comes one of the Big Ten's toughest teams.
Right.
With a freshman quarterback. I mean, USC should win this game. But I think that, to me, that is the backstory. It's the ultimate judge and jury for whether Lincoln Riley's team has gotten any tougher from last year or the year before. And if the answer is no, I mean, I think that kind of tells you all you need to know. And then it's just going to be a matter of whether USC can come up with the money to buy him out.
BYU undefeated at U of A. How do you see it?
Well, I think it'll be entertaining. I think in some ways Arizona and ASU are both in good spots because they're getting BYU and Utah the week before the Holy War. Mm. So you have a little bit of a look-ahead situation for the Utes and Cougars. The biggest game of their season is in two Saturdays. BYU's defense is really good, like maybe the best in the Big 12. They got a freshman quarterback, Bear Bachmeyer. I think Arizona can rattle him a little bit. But BYU, you know, they got a lot of older guys, and they got a good defense, and they're well-coached. Arizona, it's gonna be a hard game for Arizona to win. I think it'll be close, but it's going to be a hard game for Arizona to win. Same thing with the Sun Devils, partly because it's in Salt Lake City, right? I would expect that to just be a bruiser of a game, you know, 23-20, last possession wins, just terrific football. I mean, most of ASU's games are last possession wins,
yes,
right? Utah and BYU are both vulnerable. I just am not sure that in the two different circumstances, the Arizona schools have got quite enough to win the game.
Well, and if it goes the way that I think it goes, ASU Texas Tech in 2 weeks should be considered as a game day spot, should be considered as a national game, in my humble opinion. And I know there's other games that are out there. I don't think any of them are nearly as entertaining as this, but ASU has talked, their players, John, have said Texas Tech is the game.
Yeah.
Not, there's something there with Texas Tech.
Everybody in the Big 12 says Texas Tech's the game because everybody knows they spent $30 million on their roster and Arizona State didn't and Arizona didn't. And that is, you know, they're kind of like Alabama in a way that everybody is shooting for them. Everybody shot for Alabama because they were so good. Everybody's shooting for Texas Tech because they spent all that money and they want to prove, hey, You don't have to spend the cash to be the best team in the conference, but that's the deal. And that's been the case since the spring. At Big 12 Media Day, the coaches were talking about Texas Tech this, Texas Tech that. Oh, they got all their money. You know, kind of like old Pac-12 schools used to talk about Oregon. Mm-hmm. So I think that, yeah, ASU's got them circled. There's no doubt about that.
Okay, let's finish on what you started with, and that's the Big Ten. And taking some outside monies. Got a couple minutes on that? What do you think? laid out for the fans.
So the deal is the Big Ten is looking at potentially taking $2 billion in private capital to fund operations and various things. Part of the deal would be they'd extend their grant of rights for 10 more years. So basically, the Big Ten would have a TV deal through 2046, which I don't know why Michigan and Ohio State would take that, but they're thinking about it. The reason this would have such an impact is because it would raise the barrier, the bar for entry, so to speak, to get into the Big Ten for impossible expansion scenarios. It would reduce the Big Ten's need to expand financially. It would probably prompt the SEC to consider doing the same thing with private capital. But it's also a slippery slope, right? Whoever does this, whoever gives the money, is going to own 5% of the conference because they're going to create this holding company, and each school's going to have 1/20, and the Big Ten conference office is going to have 1/20, and then this private capital firm's going to have 1/20. So you're basically opening your door to private capital and saying you now are part of the ownership group. And that is a very slippery slope for institutions of higher learning and public universities.
That's good stuff. We'll get into that as it continues on and what the ramifications could be for the Big 12. We'll do that another time. Appreciate you as always. Have a great week. Thanks.
Thanks a lot, Brad.
There's John Wilner, and we're back with more after this timeout. All right, I have to start this interview by saying back in the day, back when I had hair, and maybe I know Todd had hair. See,
Yeah, when
that's
I
the
had
deal.
hair.
That's the deal. Back in the day, Todd Marinovich would be playing Friday night high school football, first at Modern Day and then at Capitol Valley. We launched the Mighty 690, and myself, Alan Wallace from Super Prep, I'm going to throw names at Todd's going to be like, oh, yeah, I remember that dude. I remember that dude, big Greg Biggins and Coach Quintero and all. We'd go see because this was the deal. You had to go see this quarterback, this phenom. Then I move over here to Arizona and I start doing my thing and I still follow Todd's career. And obviously, it's gone through peaks, valleys, more valleys than peaks, then peaks, then valleys because I've read the book. When people decide to write the book, and here's the thing on this, Todd, I can't get fully into this book because I want people to go buy the book. How's that? But you decided, like, we're going to chop it up some, but there's a lot in here that I'm just not going to ask you about because I think people need to open this up and read it.
Yeah,
Well,
I
thanks
agree.
for coming
I
on.
agree.
Thanks for coming on for a few minutes.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Where are you today?
I'm in Hawaii.
You're in Hawaii? Which island?
Big Island.
Big Island? Yeah, cool. Okay, so let's just get right into this. Why did you decide to do this book now where you bear everything? Why? Because this is bearing everything.
Timing. It was just when my friend Steve Wright came to me and said, you should write a book, kind of rang a bell and was like, let's do it. So hooked up with his wife's a writer, and Lizzie did a fantastic job with it, and I couldn't be more pleased.
When you decided to go down the path of doing a book, the football part's easy.
Yeah.
The addiction part's not easy. Did it take you into some dark, tough places to like spill everything out?
Yeah, for sure. It wasn't always the easiest of times writing it, and I had really no idea what I was getting myself into. But like I said, without Lizzie's help, I don't know if it could have been done. But yeah, it wasn't comfortable at times, but I think it was cathartic though
Yeah.
also.
Yeah. I would think so. And emotional too, because you're going into some places where you probably are like, I've turned the page. This part's behind me.
Right. And I think the more that you can revisit something like that and not get so emotional, there's growth there.
Addiction, just walk me through it because there are people that are going to read this book that are in that battle.
Yes.
People that are gonna read this book that are gonna say, that's the dude that I follow that was a Raider. Once a Raider, always a Raider. You know, I know that deal. So the addiction side of it in terms of trying to reach that group, because I think you're going to reach a lot of people. This book came out in August. Todd and I have been going back and forth with publicists to get him on and finally able to do it. So I just think you're going to reach a completely different audience, not just football.
That would be amazing. You know, when writing it, the real thought was, if I can connect with one, you know, then you know, it's worth it. And I don't know who will connect with that, some part of the story. I hope everybody does. But if you don't, at least they're going to get a glimpse about me, and an honest glimpse.
When you're going through addiction, it never stops.
No.
So
when you get, that's the thing. When you got it, you got it. And it's really not going away unless you treat it.
When did you first realize you had a problem?
My early 20s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And was it a given moment? I know there's some here in the book that I could recite, but I'd rather you walk us down than me just read pages.
Yeah, it was probably a culmination of events that led me to that belief. I knew going in that I had it in the genes.
Mm-hmm.
But that wasn't enough to deter me from going down that route.
The name of the book is Marinovich, Todd Marinovich, with us, Outside the Lines in Football, Art, and Addiction. It's right there in the title. He's very open, very raw about it. It is out. It is something that I would say is a must read, not just for football fans, but actually anybody who's in their space in life, because I think we all know somebody who's been touched in one way, shape, or form, and it's out right now. What do you want to clip about your dad? You know, Marv's back when we would go see you.
Yes.
And we're on the sidelines. It's like the dad doesn't let him eat cheeseburgers and he has to bring his own ice cream to parties and cake or whatever. There was all that stuff that was out there.
Right.
Like, okay, what's fact? What's fiction? What's fact? What's fiction, Todd?
Yeah, that part of the story was definitely blown out of proportion. And I started it by saying that I had never eaten those things because I knew my dad would have flipped his lid if he found out. But I was eating definitely healthy at home, but I was, you know, getting it elsewhere. So I started the whole train going, so to speak, and the media just went kind of crazy with that part of the story.
Yeah, I was tilting my head like, is that real or not? The Robo.
No, it's not real.
You know, Robo quarterback was a deal. Let's go see Robo quarterback play tonight. That was our thing, you know?
Yeah.
Who gave you that name? Do you remember?
It was a magazine. It wasn't like people were calling me that, you know?
Yeah.
Or my friends weren't calling me that. I know that.
Yeah. Your dad, in terms of your life with him, is in this book. He has since passed. He went through the battles of dementia and Alzheimer's. I've had to deal with that as an aging parent in my family with our parents. And yeah, it's something that is another side that I think you could talk to specifically about your dad and his final years and how you bonded back with him a little bit.
Oh, our relationship was very complex, and it had its peaks and valleys. But at the end, the last, 15, 20 years, he was my best friend. And to see a parent deteriorate is tough. But when you see him go in the way that dementia takes people, it's heartbreaking. And so my heart goes out to anybody dealing, going through that. But in the midst of some of his most humiliating experiences, there was some just gold in there. Mm-hmm. That we connected. And I am just so glad I hung with him until the end, even though it was scary and so many emotions, Brad, that Yeah, it's something that I had no clue about, but I just went in with love.
First time you knew that he was in trouble in that space, remember? Mm.
When he started calling me Todd, because he never did.
You were orange, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so when he started calling me Todd, I was like, what? Knew something was up.
Yeah. You lost him and you yet took from him to be a dad and a coach. You have kids.
Yeah.
What did how's your coaching style compared to your late father's?
It's super cool because I see it happens a lot where I just catch myself either saying, you know, saying a Marvism or I don't know. It happens more coaching than anything. But
anything else? Yeah.
He just impacted me in just an amazing way. And the more I live, the more I see how and what depth that he has. And it's he gave everything, you know, to me. And so it was a beautiful experience, truly.
Sure. Do you find yourself saying, holy shit, I just said what my dad said to me all these years ago?
Completely.
Your kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. How old are, if you don't mind me asking, are they playing sports? How old are they?
I have a 16-year-old son and a 14-year-old daughter.
And they're both competitive?
My son is.
Okay. And he's playing quarterback?
He's playing wide receiver right now, but he does play quarterback.
He does play quarterback. Yeah. Does he have a future in him beyond high school, do you think?
Possibly.
Yeah.
He's a smart kid, smarter than I. So by a long way. So we'll see. It's been really fun watching, you know, just watching him compete and mature. Because he's really starting to at this age, 16's. It's been fun.
That's cool. That's cool. Did he read the book? Did you sit with him and say, hey, I'm going to put this together and there's a lot about dad that's going to be in here?
Discussed it, but I don't think he has.
It's really something else. I'm going to get some football here in a second. Marinovich, a memoir, Outside the Lines in Football, Art, and Addiction. Todd Marinovich with us for a few minutes. The book is out. I would recommend it to most everybody. It's pretty deep and dark in some areas, but I think it's something that's going to touch a lot of people. And I know in my circles, they're eagerly anticipating to hear Todd on some fronts. All right. I have to know this about, I'm going to play a name game with you. Fred Biletnikoff. Without Fred Biletnikoff, where are you today?
Oh, I would have probably been, I wouldn't have been with the Raiders as long as I was. That's for sure. I am sure. And I wasn't there very long. So
right. 2 years,
it would have,
right?
It would have been a real flash in the pan. Fred was just such a, what a guy. What do I say about Fred? He just, I connected with him because I played with his son when we were little. So we had the family connection, but with his players, he was just so real and honest. And really got through to guys that made them, just like Tim Brown, just made them all, helped them become Hall of Famers. And that's just, you know, that's because not every guy that can play can coach. And just because, you know, that's just not true. He's a real teacher.
Yeah. Howie Long.
What a solid, just a man's man, and just principle driven and one of the funniest guys I know.
Really?
Yeah. Can't say enough about Howie. Howie just, and nobody fucked with Howie. I mean, they learned real fast that that was not one of the one guy that she messed with. And that's in our locker room or in opposing locker rooms.
Marcus Allen.
The only guy that would get a standing ovation in opposing stadiums. Yeah. That says it all. I never seen anything like it. Best player I ever played with.
Easily.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Next level.
Yeah. I saw him in high school at Lincoln and he was torch people.
And he was playing quarterback.
Yeah. Yeah. Damon.
What'd you think then?
He was the next. He was the next.
Yeah.
Just like when I'd see Todd Marinovich play on a Friday night, I'd get in my car and say, that's the next. You know what I'm talking about. You know, I covered some dumpy fourth string running back at San Diego State that got into a game by accident. His name was Marshall Faulk.
Marshall Faulk, yeah.
386 yards, 7 touchdowns later against Long Beach State. You just know, like I knew when I watched you play. Okay. And yeah, I'm talking to you about your book and the struggles that you've gone through and your ups and your downs, but there was not a badder man on the high school campus circuit than Todd Marinovich. It's Brett Johnson against Todd Marinovich. We're there.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's how it works.
It was an exciting time playing against a crosstown rival.
Yes. Yeah. And going from modern day, which was a quarterback factory, over to Capo, it just made Orange County football over here it's great. Okay. And I love high school, college, and pro. Over here is great, but there's nothing like the Trinity League, and there's nothing quite like a Friday night when you can say to your friends on Wednesday, let's go see this baller up at this school.
Yeah.
And I'm doing the radio stuff, and we're in San Diego, but our signal's all the way up in LA. And so it was cool to go up and see you guys play.
Yeah.
Just the thing. And look, everybody has a book. You have a book. Your book's pretty thick. Some books are thin. Your book is thick, and there's nothing wrong with that. I think it's great that you laid it all out there.
Yeah.
I have one other Raider I want to ask you about, and that's Al Davis. So Al Davis, there is this deal about Al Davis that he was the worst human, and again, worst owner. I'm growing up in San Diego, so it's pretty much not the right lens to ask people what Al Davis was like, because everybody was a Charger fan. I could care less, Chargers, Raiders. What was Al Davis like? And how did Al Davis and Mark Davis impact you?
Oh, geez, is that a big one? In ways that are still impacting me.
Really?
Yeah. Me being able to do art for the Raiders is a, and for Mark Davis himself, it's just been such an amazing experience. But his dad is the Raiders, created the whole mentality of that whole, the whole deal, you know, and back in the day, it was, he knew the game. He was a coach first, and that's just so impressive to me. And by the time our paths crossed, he gave me the shot. He was totally behind me from frickin' the gate. I was his guy. And I am so in debt for that, because I mistreated it, the whole opportunity.
Did he know?
Yeah.
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 Yeah, that's...
And it crushed him. And he was so disappointed and saddened by it when he had to let me go.
I'll end with this. The book is out. What do you want people to take from this book?
Oh, whatever they want. That's the thing. It's totally like truly art. It's my experience in life, and whatever they take is what they take. And then hopefully they take something.
It was great visiting with you. It's great to chop it up, as I like to say, and best of luck to you. And I'll keep an eye out for you. Thanks.
Right on. Thank you for having me.
Here's Todd Marinovich. The book is Marinovich. It is out, and we're back with more after this time out.